welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. With me, I have a current demon student, Ron Senior. Ron, how you doing?
Doing well, Nathan. How are you?
I am doing just fine. Thank you so much for coming on and agreeing to share your story. Why don't you take it away? How did you find us, and how has your process been so far?
Sure. I went on Reddit, and someone said that drilling was useful, so I started YouTubing LSAT drilling, and the interface video that I saw with you guys looked really promising, so I took out a free trial, and I never looked back. It was awesome.
Cool. How long have you started? Where were your scores when you began? Where are your scores now? Who have you interacted with at the Demon? And what have you learned?
Sure. So when I started in mid-March, I already had almost a month of LSAT prep under my belt. I had read Loophole. I had a bunch of books on PDF that someone lent me, and I used Khan Academy. And after about three and a half weeks, my diagnostic score went from a 147 to a 149. That's when I kind of had like an existential crisis, and I said, there's got to be a better way to do this. So I started looking into drilling, and I hopped on the Demon. It's been like a month and some change at this point. And I just scored a 171 on a practice test, which, shocking, because that's like my goal score. And now I'm just working on trying to get a perfect LR section, which is kind of difficult for whatever reason. So I'm working on it.
One question at a time, man. Yep. You've got to dig into the mistakes you're making. You know, like, why did you pick that wrong answer? Why didn't you pick that right answer? And learn as much as you can. People sometimes they're focused on too high of a level, right? Where, how can I just get perfect at LR? Well, let's start with, what have you missed? Every question you missed is an opportunity to learn something. So that's great. How much time are you devoting to it every day? And what exactly are you doing?
Sure. So a few hours a day. I'm drilling a lot using Demon 2.0. I guess that's a newer version that I'm testing a beta for. With you guys. And I'm also doing time sections a lot. So every day I'll probably do a time section. And then I do a practice test once a week. I don't want to, you know, have overkill where I'm taking too many practice tests and feeling bad about bad results. So I find a practice test once a week has been, you know, useful enough.
Have you come to any of our proctored tests, or are you just doing those on your own?
No, I haven't done a proctored test, mostly because I do my practice test on Mondays for the most part. So I just elect to do it on my own.
Okay. So drilling and timed sections, that sounds like you're doing a lot of self-studying. Are you doing any of our group stuff at all?
Of course. So I'm in the veterans group, and that's been extremely helpful. I don't think I really knew how to properly do LR until, I worked with David and Jacob in the veterans group. David is, I believe a tutor for you guys, and he's leading the group. And he's scored 170 on an official exam, and he's going to a really, really good law school. Jacob is walking me through every week. Basically, we're doing LR, and that got me to score, you know, consistently like -5. So the veterans group is super helpful.
Yeah. Ron's talking about we have affinity groups for, all subscribers actually, are eligible to register. Just go to lsatdemon.com and log in. But demon.com and sign up for any of the affinity groups that you would like to go to. We have one once a week. We do one for veterans. Those groups have been fairly small, huh? But still making progress?
Yeah, I mean, I missed one session because I went to Atlanta, and I guess only a couple people showed up. But even if it's only like 3 or 4 people, there's not so many veterans on the Demon. It's super helpful because you get to speak with people who are like scoring consistently in the 170s, and they just walk you through everything.
Yeah. I mean, hey, all you need is one study partner, right? Like, and it doesn't actually matter even if they're in the 170s, because it sounds like you're probably in the trying to be consistently in the 170s. But if you show up and there's only a 150 scorer there, boy, you're going to have the opportunity to really deepen your understanding by, you know, doing a little bit of teaching. Okay. Can we talk a little bit about your official tests? Have you sat for an official or yet or no?
Not yet. It's in June. Feeling confident about it, and just I'm keeping the same study schedule that I've been doing, basically a few hours a day. And okay. I feel like I should do pretty well.
Cool. Are you also looking at August?
Yeah, I'm looking at August. I'm not sure if I could register yet, but the moment I see I can register, I'm going to sign up.
Okay, cool. Yeah. All right. Sounds like you're on the right trajectory there. You're going to continue doing like one practice test a week?
One practice test a week, time sections every day, and a lot of drilling.
Okay. And when you get to your official test, you're going to do something special that day?
The exact same thing. Probably the day before, I'm not going to study at all. And I'll probably have one IPA to feel good. The day before, and then I'm just gonna go into the test and do what I've always done.
Okay, cool. Have you ever thought about doing that on your practice tests as well?
No, I'm kind of scared to, I'm scared to take a day off from studying, to be honest. That would like freak me out at this point. So maybe I should do that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we see students score wildly lower on their official test, we always have a hypothesis that maybe they did something differently on that test. And if you're going to take a day off before your real test.
Oh, that's a good idea. Okay.
Then yeah, next practice test. I'll take a day off before your practice test.
Yeah, 100%.
Just to keep everything the same as much as you possibly can, right? I mean, yeah. If you've been literally every day?
Every day, yeah, 100%. And some days are slower than others, but. You know, practice test days, probably the most exhaustive days, but other than that, I'm just working a lot.
Yeah. Why don't you do that for me, Ron? I'd like to see you take a day off before your next practice test and maybe get in the habit of doing that. Or if you decide that it freaks you out so much to take a day off, then maybe you don't take a day off. You know, maybe you do a light day before your test and then do a light day before your real test, because we want to make sure that we're doing nothing different, nothing extra, yeah. Nothing special, just you know, same kind of, we don't want to give the test more power than it already has, right? We create this like, oh no, I've got, you know, this day is it's all highlighted on my calendar, this is a special day. You're already kind of doing it wrong, right? Okay. It needs to just be, hey, that's just another day. It's just another practice test. I'm going to take it in August. I'm going to take it again in October if I need to. I'm in this for the long haul. And that sets you up for the best chance of success on that official test on June. Talk to me more about the veterans group.
Sure.
What do you think it is that's different? I've noticed, I mean, we had... on this week's episode of Thinking LSAT, we had Nathan, oh boy, I'm blanking on his last name, Nathan Lowry, who is a service to school.
Oh yeah, I work with somebody from them, yeah.
Yeah.
Good program.
Might have been Nathan. Yeah. What is it about the military? I mean, why have we seen so many students with a background in the services? Why do they tend to do so well on the LSAT?
I didn't know they did well on the LSAT. I mean, as far as I know, it's just me, Dave, Jake, Marvin. Like, there's a couple of people, Fiona. So I would just assume that you spent years writing reports, like really no nonsense writing, like you have to write these performance reports for the people that you manage. And that kind of gets you into the mindset of like being very brief. And so perhaps since you're used to like strict business writing, you can pick up on what the LSAT requires. Because I guess the LSAT is trying to get you to move through and filter through all of the smoke and get directly to a source of the argument. And maybe you're used to doing that since you're writing briefs.
That's really interesting. That's not at all where I expected you to go. I thought you were going to talk about work ethic.
Oh, that's I don't know. That's overused. I feel like every veteran talks about their soft skills. So I think more veterans should be talking about, like, yeah, we write these crazy performance reports where, like, every word is like to the T. It's like business writing on steroids. You use a lot of buzzwords, which I don't use in my writing, but it does get you into like a very regimented look at the English language. So when I started with LSAT Demon, I was like, oh, this is right in my alley. Like, these guys are talking my language. So maybe that makes a good attorney. I'm not sure.
Fascinating. Well, I mean, if I'm not wrong, it's fact-based, right? It's
Yes.
like evidence-based.
Yes, 100%.
You're not going to put in a whole bunch of extra flowery bullshit. It's going to be like directly to the point. Here's what happened, and this happened, and I did this, and they did this, and this is how they responded. And it's just like, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it's very dry. It's like a resume on steroids. It's very dry, and you have to list like everything that person has done in the last year in a quantitative sense. You can keep it a little qualitative, but like you need to sit down with the person to find out exactly what they've done over the last year in a very quantitative manner. No BS. And like I was an enlisted guy, so I'd have like a sergeant, yelling me down if I included anything on a performance report for a private. It's just something that I think we're a little bit more used to. Like guys like David that are officers, it must be really difficult. He probably has to do that for like 20 or 30 people.
Even when you're an enlisted guy, you write these reports. I thought you was so are you already managing people even as an enlisted guy?
Yeah, so as an enlisted person, you write EPRs for more junior members of your unit. An officer, but it takes a few years to get to that point. An officer's doing that obviously right off the bat, like because they're responsible for 20 people the moment they walk through the door.
That's good to know. You said that you're trying to get to perfect on LR. Does that mean that reading comp and games are already perfect?
No, but LR is my weakest. So games I might get like two wrong because I suck at new rule and rule substitution. And reading comp, I'm usually getting like -3 now since your must be true email. But LR, I've never gotten better than -5. Like the best I can do is -5. And typically I still do get -6, maybe -5, but for whatever reason, it's like it's been difficult.
Okay, running out of time.
No, I think it was
That's
paying
your
attention
problem.
to the
I
time
knew
too
it.
much.
I knew it. I knew it. As soon as you said -6, I knew I was going to say, "Are you running out of time?" And you were going to say no.
Right.
I knew it. All right. So what does that mean?
To run out of time.
Yeah. You have no business finishing these sections.
Today, I took
You're
an
not.
index card and I put it over. You guys have the timer on the upper right-hand corner. And I taped it there. And I said, let me see how long it takes. Because I felt like time was something actually that I was looking at too much. And I finished the section. And I felt like everything was right. And I still had 13 minutes left. And I only got 21 out of 25 right. And I was like, what the hell am I doing?
21 out of 25 is not bad. I mean, that actually sounds like you did better than you had been doing. Right, so
That's
that's,
still in
I
the
mean, you're
ball.
mad about it, but it's a good performance, actually. But you still.
I had 13 minutes left, so I probably am not thinking enough or working enough through the problem.
Well, it's easier, Ronnie, than you think it is.
Okay.
You don't need to tape anything on your computer, by the way. You can click the clock, and the clock turns off.
No, but you can still see the little line. That's like how neurotic
Oh,
I've been
just so
about it.
you're like doing math on
Yeah,
the
I'm
little
like, oh, it's
circle.
halfway full. It's like a clock. So I was like, I don't want to see that because it's messing me
I
up.
see. I see. Yeah, well, they do have that on the official test, unfortunately. Which, rather than taping a thing over it, I would instead I would get used to it and
Okay.
get used to ignoring it. I mean, you really need to train yourself to ignore it. But here's the thing. You have plenty of time. You need to start behaving like a lawyer.
Okay.
The way you behave like a lawyer is you slow down and you just don't pick an answer until you're pretty sure that not only it's right, but the four wrong answers are wrong.
Okay.
And some of them are going to take you 3 or 4 minutes. Some of them are going to take 30 or 40 seconds. I don't care how long any individual question takes, and I don't care if you finish the section, but you need to get mad at yourself for each of those mistakes that you're making because it's just not lawyer shit to finish the section and miss 6 questions. I would much
Agreed.
rather you ran out of time. Like, your goal is get 22 in a row right at the beginning of the section
Yeah.
and then run out of time
Yeah, the
because
most right I've ever gotten in a row was 14, so I'm probably doing something wrong.
that's your problem, is that you're dropping earlier, easier questions because even though you're trying to slow down, you've just got you're too quick to think you got it
Yeah.
when you in fact don't got it, right? And even if it's not because you're racing the clock, I think you're just like, you might be there might be something in an answer that you just, oh, that looks good because it says this phrase or whatever. And it's like, well, but when we zoom out, you'll realize that, yeah, that phrase is there, but the rest of that answer doesn't answer the question. And not only that, but there's this other answer sitting right there that does answer the question. And so you've, and I'm not, I'm not trying to beat you up
No,
specifically,
no,
but
no.
I am sure that your issue with logical reasoning is you're just not really understanding. It's either the argument or the question or the wrong answer that you've picked. There's something there that you just didn't read properly.
Yeah, and I think I know 100% you're right because every time I do blind review, I'm like, this was so easy. Why the hell did I get it wrong? I've literally had that moment. It's like, it's a question 24, but it doesn't matter. I'm like, it's a 5-star, it doesn't matter. It's so easy on blind review where I'm just relaxing. But on the test, I felt whatever I felt. So it must mean that I'm not taking the time during the test.
Yeah, I have always on standardized, I've always done really well on standardized tests, always. And one of the things that I do, I did it in high school on my SAT. Forgive me if you've heard the story before, but they said go, the proctor said go, and everybody in the room frantically ripped into their test booklet, and I did not go. I took a breath. I looked around the room. I watched everybody, frantically missing questions. And I wasn't going to do that. I was going to get them all right. And I knew that when I just decided to start on my own time, when I started, I knew that I was going to run the table, basically. Because I was going to be careful and I was just going to pick right answers and not pick wrong answers. And so yeah, maybe experiment with we talked about doing your real test the same way that you do your practice tests. When you do your timed sections or when you do a full test, but even when you do timed sections, which sounds like you're doing that most days, which is great. When you do a timed section, maybe hit start and then close your eyes for 10, 15 seconds. Take a couple of those calming, deep breaths, read that first argument, and then take another 10 seconds. By the time you choose an answer there, it should be like so easy and so obvious. And that should be your experience all the way through the section. Yeah, there's going to be some harder ones. There's going to be some that you're going to have to think about a little bit more. But just feel free to give yourself almost unlimited little breaks during the test where I'm picking an answer. I feel good about it. Okay, great. I'm going to load up the next question and then I'm going to breathe. Because it's so much easier than you think it is if you're doing it the right way. And it just sounds like you're just biting off a tiny bit more than you can chew, and you're doing a little bit of rationalizing, right? Oh, well, I know it's either B or D, and it's probably B. And then you just pick it without, like, really, you know, you just haven't actually solved it all the way.
Yeah, I'm in a 50-50 scenario a lot, which I probably shouldn't be. And then I'm like, no, but this is what the question's actually saying. But who knows if that's... It probably shouldn't be that way. I should know one is wrong and one is right.
Well, yeah, if you narrow it down to a 50-50 frequently, it's a sign that you're doing the test too passively. So I need you to do it more actively instead. I need you to resist the urge to read the answer choices so quickly. I need you to spend more time with the argument. And frequently, it's not even the entire argument. It's like halfway through the argument, they already did something wrong.
Yeah.
Or there's already an assumption, or they're about to reach a conclusion that's not really justified by those facts. You start to recognize the patterns, right? But you got to stop there and really let it sink in and really think about what they just did and tune in to that. And then you're already kind of predicting what the answer should be. And then when you get to the answers, more often than not, I mean, boy, 75% of the time, probably on logical reasoning, I'm predicting those answers. Yeah. Ain't no comparing C and E to each other. I know what the answer is. I was looking for the answer.
So you're never just reading a set of facts, or you're never just reading an argument and saying, okay, I got it, and then go, you're going to make sure you have it. You're going to make sure you pause on that stimulus and really think about it.
Yeah, it's 10 or 15 seconds that might save you 2 or 3 minutes. You know, students spend so much time comparing answers to each other. Well, this could be it, but, and this could be it, but, and well, this one has something slightly weird about it, but this one has something slightly weird about it. And then they think that it's this like comparison and that both of the answers are credible.
Right.
They're not.
Okay.
One of the answers is correct and one of the answers is incorrect. There is something objectively correct about the right answer and there's something objectively incorrect about the wrong answer. And it's not about like finding the best fit or the best one. It's just one of those answers is right and one of them is wrong. And by the way, if you would have resisted the answer choices in the first place, just don't even look at the answer choices. You very likely might have predicted that right answer, which is just, you know, the shortcut of all shortcuts.
Yeah, I remember in one of the explanation videos, Ben said, you want to focus most of your time on the left side of the page, not the right.
Yes.
And I'm still trying to internalize that personally, but I think I'm just going to really take my time and just try to get every single one that I attempt correct.
The irony is, not rush. You might end up going faster by doing it this way.
I've got to imagine, yeah, because on some of these, I'm sitting there between like a 50-50 and have to read the passage again a couple times.
Right. And that almost never happens to me. I mean, like I narrow it down to zero answers far more frequently than I narrow it down to two.
Okay.
You know, it's more likely that I've made a prediction. I have something that I'm looking for. I scan the five answers and none of them are really speaking to me.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's fine. I was right on 4 out of the 5. They're wrong. And I knew they were wrong. One of them somehow is hiding from me. And then, yeah, if I have to reread the argument or reread the question or think about my prediction again and then read the five answers again, and then maybe I'll see that little glint of I see. They want the answer. It's D because, and then here's what they meant by that. And you know what I'm, do you see the difference? I'm like, I'm inside the heads of the test makers where one answer to them in their minds, one answer is objectively right and four answers are objectively wrong. And they wrote the question with a purpose, and one of the answers is perfect in their minds. It's not about compare two and pick the better of the two. It's not like, you know, people are always like, well, but Nathan, if B wasn't there, then it would be D, right? And I'm like, no. If B wasn't there, the question would not make sense. D is objectively wrong because of this reason.
Well, so if you're spending time on a 50-50, you essentially just don't understand what you read at all. You think that one of them is right when they're actually wrong. That's interesting.
One
You should know it,
if
like. Okay, yeah, that's interesting.
yeah, if you think there's two good answers, you are wrong. I mean, there's just not. And it's like there aren't nearly as many even second best. Now, there are attractive traps, but you wouldn't have fallen into that trap if you just assume answers are wrong to begin with. You heard me talk about this before?
Assume answers are wrong to begin with? No, I haven't heard
Well,
that.
would you agree with me that A is the wrong answer 80% of the time? And B is the wrong answer 80% of the time, and C and D and E are each wrong 80% of the time.
Yeah, 1 in 5.
So, the answer choices are not your friend. The answer choices are the swamp. The answer choices are the enemy. Every answer has an 80% chance of being wrong. So if you get to the answer choices too quickly, without a prediction or without a good command of the passage or without a good understanding of the question and, you know, without some idea of what you're looking for, well, then when you start reading A, 80% of the time, that's the wrong answer. Same with B, same with C, same with D, same with E. The answer choices are a mess. They're professionally written to distract you and confuse you and waste your time.
Yeah, and I'm actually, I got reminded, you said 80% a few times there, and I got reminded of the Pareto principle. Like, maybe I should be spending 80% of my time on the stimulus. Maybe I should be spending like 4/5 of the test, like just reading the stimulus on LR.
Yes, because the passage is where it's at. I mean, no matter what type of question it turns out to be, you know, strengthen or weaken or whatever, that's just related to, well, there's something there in the argument that's.
Even if it's bottom up.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, well, listen. What happens frequently is they make a bad argument. If they're making an argument, they almost always make a bad argument. Now, then they can ask you to strengthen that bad argument or weaken that bad argument, or they can ask you like a flaw question to describe that bad argument. They could even ask you a main conclusion question or a must be true or any assumption. I mean,
Parallel.
the point is they've made, yes, parallel reasoning, they've made a bad argument. And you need to understand, get as close as you can to exactly why that argument is bad. Then look at the question, then think about the question type, then make a prediction. And after all of that is done, then you can brave answer choice A, which is wrong 80% of the time, and it should look wrong,
Yeah.
right? If you rush through that, if you flip it, which I think that's exactly what people do, they spend 20% of the time on the passage and 80% of the time on the answer choices. And I do want you to flip that exactly. I want you to spend 80% of the time on the passage and on the question and on making a good prediction, and then 20% of the time on the answer choices. I blaze through the answers because I expect them to be wrong.
Yeah, you guys do. When I'm watching your videos, you guys just, you're like machines. You just get right through it.
Well, yeah, and it's like I know that sometimes students get frustrated, like, well, Nathan, you've been going on and on and on for 4 minutes about the passage. I want to know about the difference between B and D. And it's like, you
That is the
don't get
difference.
it.
Yeah.
If you really understood my 4 minute discussion of this passage, then you wouldn't be comparing B to D anymore, because one of them is exactly what I've been talking about and one of them is garbage.
Yeah, and I guess I end up on 50-50 quite a bit, and I'm probably getting more of those right than wrong, but that's probably not what top scorers do. I think,
no.
I imagine they're just hitting it out of the park every time. Like the same
yes.
way I dismiss like three of them are just like garbage. Top scorers probably dismiss four of them as just garbage. Like they just see it.
Or all five.
All five?
Like it's okay to sometimes dismiss all five. In fact, okay. Again, I do that much more frequently than I think there are two good answers.
Okay.
Right? Novices and intermediate, you know, I would describe you as like high intermediate. You're already, you know, you've cracked 170 on practice tests. So it's not like you suck at the test, but you can get so much better because you're doing it the hard way.
Yeah.
And what I want to invite you to do is to start doing the test the easy way, which involves take more time on the passage, really dig in there, really understand what's their evidence, what's their conclusion, is this bullshit? It probably is. Why is it bullshit? Then the question, what type of question is this? Is it a sufficient assumption question? Okay. Is it a necessary assumption question? Well, that's a different analysis.
So you're stopping there as well.
Bottom up. Oh, of course. Yeah. We actually did a podcast, Thinking LSAT podcast episode recently, where we talked about pausing after we read the passage,
mm-hmm.
then pausing again after we read the question, and then probably a pause again after you choose the right answer. You know, because we want to get ourselves in this rhythm of just calmly, carefully understanding what we're reading, making good predictions, finding that prediction, confidently choosing it. The wrong answers look like garbage because they are. Take a breath. All right, let's do it again.
Yeah, and I just realized the way because I'm most of the time during the test, I'm doing what you guys do in your videos in my head, where I'm like having a dialogue with the passage,
good.
Right? With the stimulus. But it reminds me of your advice with writing. Many times after the stimulus, I'm like, okay, I understand. But like, I'm not showing myself any evidence that I understand it. You know, like if I get to the end of the passage and I can't like show myself the evidence, like, okay, so this and this and this and this, and I'm just like, okay, I buy it. I'm probably going to end up spending way more time. Like, that's just lazy. I should be like showing myself definitively that I understand it. I should 100% understand it. Like, it's not that
and
hard.
Frequently,
it's
the way you understand it, you know, when you read one of those arguments, if you tell me that the argument is bullshit, I go, well, okay, yeah, I agree with that conclusion.
That's a cop out. Yeah, I tell myself that
is,
all the time.
But why?
That's
you know,
a cop
why?
Out. Oh, that's stupid. Like, I'll say that in my head, and but
exactly.
I'm not like, showing the evidence.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's good that you're being critical, right? You're on the right track. If you think the argument is bogus, it probably is. But why exactly? Like,
right.
Their premises, you can't argue with those. The conclusion is the thing you can argue with. And you've got to basically tell me, well, the premises don't justify the conclusion because, and then you can start listing off. And frequently there's multiple problems.
Yep.
That's how you know that you really understand. Then you read the question, figure out whose team you're on, figure out exactly what operation we're required to do here to find the right answer. And then by that point, then when you actually do start looking at the answer choices, it's like, no, no, yes, perfect. No, no, great. The answer is C.
That's where I want to get. That's where I want to get to. Okay. So slow down a lot.
I think you're going
to
get there. Yeah. I think you've got it in you for sure. It's just, you know, you've got to, at your current level of scoring, you should be running out of time sometimes.
Okay.
And you do need to start assembling longer strings of correct answers at the very beginning of the section. I mean, you're not going to get to perfect if you don't get to number 15.
Yeah, I'm going to see if how fast it takes me to get to number 15.
Yeah.
And run out
and
of time.
Then, yeah, I mean, you know, don't manage it. Okay. Don't do the math and start spending exactly 85 seconds on every question, or don't do intermediate targets like, well, I need to make sure that I spend X amount of time on the first 10. Don't do any of that stuff. Just before you choose an answer, you're not settling for the best. You're picking the one right answer, right? It's binary. I mean, you're
Yeah.
either going to get 1 point or 0 points.
Yeah, I do that on reading comp, weirdly enough, because of your article on reading comp being must be trues. I'm always like, okay, I'm choosing this answer because I see it there in the second passage. But for whatever reason on LR, it gets lazier. Maybe because there's like an argument involved, I'm not sure, but I'm definitely just going to take it one question at a time.
Awesome. Maybe we'll get you back as the June test approaches, or sometime after the June test. We could check in on your
Hopefully with good
progress.
news.
Okay. Awesome. Ron Senior is a current LSAT Demon subscriber and an active member of the Veterans Study Group. Thanks so much, Ronnie, for coming on the show. And don't be a stranger. Talk to you
All
soon.
right, thank you. Bye.